It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Sandy Rios with you on this celebration of the 4th of July, 2020. And you know, when I listen to that song, I think about the circumstances under which Francis Scott Key penned those words that we sing and that are so familiar that give us goosebumps for a reason, because Francis Scott Key had worried that the flag might not survive nor the country through a long night of battle with the British. And when the morning broke and he saw the flag, even though it was shredded a bit, he said, you know, it was a beautiful sight. And then that's why he said, oh, say, can you see the Star-Spangled Banner? And he could still see it. And that's what we're fighting for now, isn't it? We're fighting to save our country. No country on earth has a story like ours. Not a single one was founded by design and thought and prayer the way ours was founded. We have an incredible, spectacular history. And I hope that on this particular weekend, you will take it upon yourselves to gather your children, your family, your neighbors, and talk about, read, share about what makes this country so great as we remind ourselves why it's worth fighting for. One of the things the Founding Fathers did was develop three branches of government. You might remember that. Those of you that are older will. Some of the younger ones probably have no idea. But one of those branches, co-equal three branches of government, many people say that the Founding Fathers did that based on the Trinity in the Bible, the God, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, because it's like a perfect, it's a check and balance, three different parts of equal branches. One of those branches is the Supreme Court, and through the years we have seen it do some really fine things and some really bad things, and the Founding Fathers had very strong feelings about what that court should do and how it should operate. Hans von Spakovsky is my guest today. He's a senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation. He's also the manager of their election law reform initiative. He's a good friend and a frequent guest because of his expertise, because he's my friend too. But Hans, by the way, first of all, happy Independence Day.
Well, thanks. That's something we particularly celebrate in my family. You know, I'm a son of immigrants, and I'm very thankful that I got a chance to be born and grow up in this country along with my siblings.
Yes, I know you have a great story, actually, Hans. And sometime we're going to tell it again sometime when the time is right. But honestly, give us let's pretend like we're going to do a Supreme Court 101 just for a second. Give us an idea of what the function of that court was supposed to be designed by the Constitution.
Well, it is not Congress. It is not supposed to be making legislation, acting like a super legislature there. The only thing it's supposed to do is apply the laws passed by Congress as they were written. And ensure that neither the president nor Congress is acting beyond the authority they've been granted in the Constitution. And, you know, the best example of that that I can give is if Congress passed a law outlawing the private ownership of guns in this country, it would be the Supreme Court's job to declare that law unconstitutional and beyond the authority of Congress to do because of the Second Amendment.
So the court traditionally, though, and by design, was supposed to look at laws passed by both houses of Congress and signed by the president or issues brought by citizens and weigh it against what's written in the Constitution and another law, I guess. But everything has to be passed the litmus test of the Constitution. And if they are not supposed to have opinions of their own. I mean, they're not supposed to exercise those opinions. Is that right?
That's exactly right. In fact, at one point, Justice Antonin Scalia, and boy, do I miss him being on the court.
Yeah, me too.
You know, at one point, he said, the paraphrasing, that oftentimes, you know, Congress passes stupid legislation. It's not the Supreme Court's job to get rid of stupid legislation. It's to determine whether the stupid legislation is unconstitutional.
Yeah. So we are seeing, though, I don't need to spend a lot of time saying this, everyone knows, that the court has been, according to your words, in an article you just read, the Supreme Legislature, because they're deciding for the people and also replacing the role of Congress in making decisions that are affecting public policy and more personally, the lives of the American people. Hans, can you point to a time when that started? What decision did that start with from your knowledge?
It really started in the 1930s. Up until that time, the Supreme Court was actually pretty good at limiting the power of Congress or basically keeping it within the limited powers in the Constitution granted to Congress. But you may recall that Franklin Roosevelt got so upset over the fact that the Supreme Court kept declaring that these big government programs that Roosevelt was pushing through Congress were unconstitutional because Congress didn't have the power to do this, that he threatened to tax the court. Sounds familiar. Yeah, that's being threatened now. And he got some appointments to the court, and the end result of that threat and getting some of the appointments to the court was that all of a sudden the court started okaying all of the programs that Roosevelt wanted to put in place. And ever since then, the court, with rare exceptions, has placed almost no limits on what Congress can do. And you and I both know, I mean, one of the worst examples of that was when John Roberts, just a couple of years ago, joined the liberals on the court to say that Obamacare was legal, which would have made the founders roll over in their graves. Because what he was in essence saying was that the federal government could force an American to buy insurance. And the best way of looking at that is, look, we had a tea party in Boston because the British monarchy was forcing Americans to pay a tax on tea. If they had had the power, the U.S. Supreme Court says Congress has, the monarchy wouldn't have put a tax on tea. They would have just passed a law saying all colonials have to buy tea.
We are so removed from that original understanding of what it means to be free that nothing shocks us anymore. And so I do think since we started with Roberts, let's just continue here, because he was appointed by George W. Bush. We all thought, we reckoned, we assumed he was a conservative justice, and he was appointed to be Chief Justice, no less. And it was kind of exciting. He was young and fresh. He had a beautiful family, and we eagerly anticipated these great decisions he was going to make. But it did, I think that was the turning point, don't you, Fons? What, did he make any other troubling decisions before that I don't recall?
No, he was pretty good until then, but what he is basically turning into the Justice Kennedy of the court, someone who switches and votes with liberals on what are socially or politically controversial issues. In fact, in one of the bad decisions that he joined within the last 2 weeks, Justice Thomas, I think, very accurately said that the court was avoiding the legally correct decision that would have been politically controversial because it would have been politically controversial.
It's amazing to, and you know what, to be clear here, Hans, I think, and we're going to get into a lot of these decisions as best we can. There's so many of them. To be clear, like on the issue of Obamacare, you are not saying that Roberts is conservative. Neither am I saying this. Because he's conservative, he should have voted down Obamacare. It's not that.
No, not at all.
It's that he declared without any kind of foundation in the Constitution that it was a tax when the legislature actually had said it wasn't clearly in writing. It was not a tax. And he declared it, in his opinion, to be a tax. That was shocking. Not the role of the court.
He rewrote the legislation, actually ignoring the language of it in order to not have to find it unconstitutional and toss it out. And it was just, like I said, it was just a horrible decision. But that kind of rewriting of a law, which is not what the court is supposed to do, that's up to Congress to do. That's exactly what happened, last Monday in the Bostock decision, which was the decision involving the Civil Rights Act of 64, where they basically rewrote the law.
Oh, that's really one of the most shocking. But apart from Roe v. Wade, I honestly can't think of I'd have to think this through, and this is your area of expertise, not mine, but it seems to me that this particular decision will have greater effect, like a horrific effect, really, on this country, same as Roe versus Wade. And so Justice Roberts wasn't the only person to join in ruling against the funeral home director. We should say that this was a case of a funeral home director who had hired a man who decided to become a woman. And he was, I think, in the position of greeting people and working with bereaved families. And the funeral home operator let him go because he said he thought it would be disconcerting, whatever his words were. And that the court held that the gentleman was right to sue and that the funeral home director could not let him go based on, they say, sex. Explain that, Hans, if you could, please.
Sure. The law in question was the Civil Rights Act of 1964. And the Civil Rights Act of 1964, this particular section, makes it illegal to discriminate in the employment situation. You can't hire or fire somebody on the basis of their race, their national origin, and one of the other terms they put in was sex. And in 1964, sex was put in for one purpose and one purpose only, and everybody understood that, and that was to stop the widespread employment discrimination being practiced against women. And yet, Judge Gorsuch, in his opinion, basically applied the word sex to also include homosexuality and gender identity. Now, gender identity wasn't even a concept in 1964. And as Justice Alito said in his dissent, there is no way that a single member of Congress who voted for this law in 1964 to prevent employment discrimination against women could have possibly thought that it would apply to a man who tells his employer, well, I now identify as a woman, and so I'm going to be coming to work dressed as a woman. I mean, the idea is simply ridiculous. And Gorsuch usually is pretty good, has been pretty good on many cases. But he just factually, historically, and legally made a colossal error in his decision on this case. Because what he's saying doesn't make any sense. The basic thing here is, and this is something Kavanaugh also said in his dissent, was, look, Americans may decide they want a policy like this, but that's not up to the Supreme Court to decide. That's up to Congress. If Congress wants to rewrite the law, they could do that. But in fact, they've tried to do it for years. There's a bill been dropped called the Equality Act And Congress has specifically rejected adding those two concepts to the Civil Rights Act. So, hey, Supreme Court did it for them.
Well, so this is where it reminds me of Roe versus Wade, where abortion was not legal, maybe in a couple of states, maybe only, and then made legal for all 9 months in Doe versus Bolton. So the Supreme Court, like their heavy gavel, came down and they declared abortion to be legal, that band of nine people. And this is what they did with this. This is going to have the same kind of repercussions. We have been talking about this, Hans, and I want us to talk about other things, but I think the point in the court is that Gorsuch made much of being an originalist, like Scalia, when he was under nomination. An originalist means that you interpret the law based on when it was written, what people were thinking, what they intended, right?
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And to claim that the common understanding of the word sex in 1964 included gender identity is historically and factually just simply 100% wrong.
Yep. Hans, we're going to run out of time. There's so many decisions. We need to talk about that Louisiana abortion restriction law where John Roberts joined again with the liberal justices. This was a shocking decision because you explain why it's a shocking decision instead of me.
Well, it's shocking for this reason. Look, this was a law really intended to protect the health of patients, because what it basically said was that if you're going to perform abortions, which is surgery, you have to have admitting principles that the doctor does with a nearby hospital. And yet the court threw it out, John Roberts joining the four liberal justices. And what's so crazy about this is, look, Texas passed an almost identical law 4 years ago. Justice Kennedy was still on the court. The Supreme Court declared it to be unconstitutional. But guess who was in the dissent saying this was a perfectly constitutional law in Texas? John Roberts.
Yes.
So here, 4 years later, he's got the opportunity to overturn what he said was clearly a wrongly decided opinion, and instead, citing Stare Decisis, which is not supposed to really overturn precedent, he joins with the liberals to uphold the law. It is one of the dumbest decisions I've seen, and there is just no basis for the Chief Justice Roberts' logic in refusing to overturn what he himself said was a wrong decision.
Well, they're actually calling him the Justice Kennedy on steroids, and I think that's a well-deserved. We're going to need to do a lightning round. Let me just throw a topic out and tell us what there was a good decision made more recently, 5-4, in a religious school case. Can you just say a word about that?
Yeah, very quickly. Espinoza of Montana put in a law saying, hey, you can get a tax credit if you donate to a nonprofit that provides scholarships for kids to attend private schools. But the state said, oops, you can't do that if it's a religious school. And in Espinoza, the five justices of the court said, no, you can do that. You cannot bar religious schools because that's discriminating against them under the First Amendment.
All right, so that's actually a great decision. And then there's been a couple of immigration decisions. We have talked about the DACA decision where Barack Obama declared Dreamers could be made legal and president by executive order, which was illegal. President Trump reversed it, and now the Supreme Court says it's illegal for President Trump to reverse the illegal decision of Barack Obama. Is that correct, how I put that?
Yeah, it was a nutty decision. On the other hand, almost at the same time, we got a good decision in immigration when the court upheld a provision of the immigration law that provides for expedited removal of aliens who come here claiming asylum, but it turns out that they basically have a fraudulent asylum claim. And what the law said was, once Department of Homeland Security determines it's not a valid claim, you do not have a right to appeal that decision to federal court.
Okay, so that was a positive decision for those
it
of us that
positive.
Are concerned about. Yeah, okay, so a couple of things. Second Amendment, they sort of punted on that issue. They also have yet to decide about the Trump tax issue. And so we don't know what we're going to do with that. Hans, I'm sorry, we're out of time, but this is a great rundown, and you always make things so clear with your knowledge, and I really appreciate that. So the court has come a long way, baby, and it looks like maybe we're going to have some more vacancies, whoever is elected president, and so much is at stake in the 2020 election, no doubt about it. Hans von Spakovsky. Well, that's what I get when I try to hurry. Senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Happy 4th of July, Hans, and thanks for joining me. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Americans took to the streets outside of New York's Stonewall Inn to fight against harassment and hate, we take pride in the progress we have forged together. Our founders, in their great wisdom, wrote in our beautiful preamble of the blessings of liberty, which were to be the birthright of all Americans, to bring our nation closer to the founding promise of liberty and justice for all. We today pass the Equality Act and finally fully end discrimination against LGBTQ Americans.
On this vote, the yeas are 236, the nays are 173. The bill is passed.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. So on this July 4th, July 3rd of 2020, it really is a time when I think it's possible for us to understand what our founding fathers really fought for, the freedom that they so vociferously were willing to give their lives and they pledged their lives and their fortunes, everything they had, so that their children and they could be free. We are beginning to enter into a time of bondage, whether we realize it or not. When Nancy Pelosi was just declaring victory on the Equality Act in the House last year, she was talking about the founding fathers promising the blessings of liberty. But the truth is, it's the opposite. What they are attempting to pass in the House and also in the Senate, and we're going to get into the details of that, is the furthest thing from equality when it comes to the entire population of the United States. It is special rights, unnatural rights. You could fill in the blank in a number of ways. I've asked someone to join us that hasn't been with us in a long time, and his presence on the show is pretty important this morning for a lot of reasons. His name is Delegate. He was the former Delegate Bob Marshall of the Virginia House of Delegates. Bob served there faithfully for more than, I think, a couple of decades. He was the sponsor of the ban on partial birth abortion. He was the sponsor of the marriage amendment. He was a champion in every way. And then about 2 years ago, he was beaten by a transgender candidate named Danica Rome. And so Danica now serves as the delegate in Bob Marshall's place. It was a sweet irony for the lesbian, gay, transgender lobby, but it was a bitter defeat for conservatives in Virginia. And I've asked him to join us this morning for a discussion of all that's happening. First of all, Bob, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Well, Sandy, thank you for doing your program so long and so faithfully.
Bob, I want to talk to you about Virginia first, because you poured your heart into your state. And before that, you worked in the U.S. Congress, but your home state is Virginia, and you served so long in Richmond. And I know it was a stunning loss for you when Danica Rome took that seat and the national LGBT lobby descended on you with fierce force, and you didn't have much defense. But since that time, your state has morphed into something most of us can hardly recognize. Can you describe for us what you are seeing in Virginia right now?
This is the complete secularization of Virginia with a touch of hedonism added. And why do I say that? Every statute that had any restriction whatsoever on abortion for the first 3 months is gone. No parental consent, no parental notice, They want to spend money, tax money on abortions that we had prohibited. Anything like that is completely gone. They decriminalized marijuana, which is I see no real difference between that and legalization, other than you pay a small fine. It's like a tariff. Anything that pertains to these kind of behaviors is gone. So the Christian self-restraint, which talks about Christian forbearance in the Constitution of Virginia, is gone by the boards. And then they want to strip people of their ownership of guns. I mean, you wonder what they want to do if they need to take your guns also. So it's a complete reversal, and it wasn't that many people who switched. The problem is the seculars, the abortionists, homosexuals, have been very active in the mechanics of elections, that is, going out and registering people. And they don't necessarily talk about their radical program. They just go up and say, hi, you know, vote for Mr. Nice Guy or Miss Nice Guy, and you'll, you know, think a lot better of yourself. That being the case, they beat 17 Republicans who were roadblocks to these things in 2017, and then they went over the edge here in 2019. So the other side simply did the mechanics. They registered the voters. I could not get enough Christians to walk door to door. I was outspent about $1 million to about $400,000. I had been outspent before, but I had never been outmanned by volunteers. But my opponent had homosexual volunteers, LGBT, whatever they want to identify themselves by, all over the place, come into the district. And again, if the Christians don't register more people and get out and vote, you're going to see what happened in Virginia in all 50 states.
Well,
it's
absolutely true. Virginia is the microcosm, the litmus test of what's going to happen all over the United States if the 2020 presidential election and the Senate and the House of Representatives on the national level, and all states, every state, ever the 49 states or however many now are conservative, probably 35 or something like that. But it's also, we need to, before we move to the issue we want to talk about, it's also religious freedom, because your governor, Ralph Northam, has used the COVID pandemic, this is what they like to call it, to enforce draconian restrictions on houses of worship. Is that right, Bob?
Well, if you were an abortion clinic, you could stay open. If you were a church, you had severe restrictions on the number of people that could come to a service, not conditioned on the size of the church itself, but a number of 10 was the limit. So if you had a church that could hold 1,000 people, you only could have 10 persons at a service. That seems very odd to me.
It is very odd, and of course that's happening in other states like California, where the lawsuit went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and the pastor lost who made that very argument in court. How is it that, you know, other businesses and, you know, Target, Walmart, others are able to do to function, and you are restricting churches to this extent? But that's what your governor in Virginia has done with COVID. So you guys have lost Virginia, the home of freedom, really. Bob, I think my experience living in Virginia is that people in Virginia actually know their history, for the most part, better than most Americans, maybe because you're so close to D.C., so many people are government workers. But there's a rich history in Virginia, so that the irony of this is not lost on that, too. Can you just say a word about Virginia's heart and soul, the birthplace of freedom?
Well, the Declaration of Independence was written by a Virginian, Thomas Jefferson. The Constitution was largely the work of James Madison, who was a Virginia member of the House of Delegates, a member of Congress from Virginia, and a president who was elected from Virginia. He's the father of the Constitution. So all this history, the rich refinement, the attempt to find guarantees and protections for rights, came from Virginia. We now are reversing all these things, especially with this one statute that passed, the so-called Virginia Values Act, which should be called the Virginia Devaluation of Religious Values, because what it does, it will fine any religious entity, not just religious entities, but it's aimed at them, if you do not hire an individual, let's say you have a Christian school, and you don't want to have people teaching in your school who do not reflect the truths of the Christian faith in their own personal life. Somebody like two men who think they're married to each other. If you don't hire that person, first time you don't do that, you're going to be fired, fined $50,000 and multiple fines thereafter. This so-called discrimination is ludicrous, because the Democrats couldn't be, you know, compelled to take a Republican into their caucus, yet the Christians are going to have to take people who are at war with the fundamental truths of the Christian faith based on this bizarre notion of discrimination. I mean, this discrimination is not a shield to protect the homosexuals. It is a sword to vanquish all Christian influence from a society. And this decision we had the other day dealt with the jobs aspect of it, but the bill, the Equality Act, deals with every other aspect of Christian life in America. And if it passes and it's fully implemented, all Christian influence, whether it's running a pantry, food pantry for poor people, whether it's adopting, whether it's helping people, service them, is going to be gone, because there will not be allowed any Christian influence, meaning holding the behaviors, basically the sexual behaviors, on fidelity in marriage, restraint until marriage, and marriage only between a man and a woman. Those things will cause you to lose the tax status of your school, to have a hospital which will be compelled to do so-called sex change operations, a religious hospital, to fund tax funding of abortion. A single-sex sports team at a private Christian school will not be allowed to compete against the so-called, all-sex sports teams in public schools. They will decertify the schools as being eligible to satisfy the compulsory attendance law. So this is make or break. And if the Christians don't understand this, I mean, they are in for, your alternatives are going to be persecution or apostasy.
Yes,
not a
absolutely.
Very bright notion. Again, you don't have to have this, but you got to do the work to elect people.
Yes.
Who will not push this agenda.
Yes, and let's go back just for a second. Let me set the table a little bit, if I could. You've certainly laid the groundwork. You're talking about the Equality Act. The Equality Act was passed. We heard the clip at the top of the show. This was just a year ago. It seems like forever. It was May of 2019. It was passed in the House because the House is ruled by the left right now. So they passed the bill. It does all the things Bob talked about and more, which hopefully we'll get back to that too. It was passed in the House, and then it just sort of went dormant because it didn't do anything in the Senate. And then the Supreme Court decided just, 2 weeks ago, maybe not quite 2 weeks, to make a decision on what was called the Bostock case. And it was a funeral home that had hired a man who decided he wanted, after he'd worked there for several years, he was kind of like the front man for grieving families. He wanted to become a woman, and they felt, because I believe they're a Christian funeral home, that that might be a problem, and grieving people might be distracted and not comforted by a man who thinks he's a woman and dresses like a woman. And so they fired him. He went to the Supreme Court, and they ruled last week or two weeks ago that he had no rights. The gentleman who changed his gender could maintain his job. The funeral home had no rights. Okay, so Bob, what is that in relation to the Equality Act? Why did that springboard then action in the Senate, which we'll get to in just a second? What's the catalyst here?
Well, here, this is the circumstance. The Bostock versus Clayton County case said that the Civil Rights Act of 1964, when it was passed, the Congress thought they're just having job discrimination prohibition based on sex. The Supreme Court said, oh, no, you were also including discrimination bans based on sexual orientation and gender identity. Now, the majority claimed they used the ordinary public meanings of the terms of the 1964 Act that was in current use in 1964. They also said all parties to the case here assume that sex in 1964 meant only the biological distinctions between male and females. And 16 times between 1964 and 2020, efforts were made to add the term sexual orientation to the Civil Rights Act. And 7 times there were efforts to add the terms gender identity. All of these failed. So how does the Supreme Court come up and say it actually meant that? Because clearly the people who were advocating these changes weren't sleepwalking. They weren't completely stupid. They may have been on the other side of things, but they weren't dummies. But that is what happens here. The court uses a kind of a slick ruse here, taking the term discrimination, which they say means different treatment, and it does. Consider this. Would a school board be required to hire a legally blind person, an alcoholic, someone with a bad driving record or suspended driving records to run school buses? The answer is no. They make distinctions because they're concerned with the safety of the children. The LGBT zealots here are out to completely de-Christianize any of these institutions that would operate according to the normal natural law or the, you know, revelation as you know, portrayed in the Old and New Testament on morals. That is the objection. This is not a bill about jobs, but this the decision a couple weeks ago only dealt with jobs. The Equality Act goes beyond jobs and goes into the entire panoply of social interaction.
So, Bob, let me interject here. So we have Neil Gorsuch, who wrote the majority opinion on that Bostock opinion, and that means an unleashing, really, against religious freedom in this country, which we can go into in a second. I don't want us to run out of time. So the Senate then, on the heels of that decision, decided by stealth to introduce through a unanimous consent. They tried to pass it in the Senate, this same Equality Act, which had no luck, no chance of passing in the Senate before this. Suddenly it comes up. Mike Lee catches it, gets Josh Hawley and from Oklahoma, the senator from Oklahoma, Lankford, to join him in voting against it. But that's the only thing that stopped it. And so now they are focused on the Senate leadership, Mitch McConnell, none of the leaders of the committees, none of those leaders you see standing before us did anything to resist it. And so there's great danger here. And so, Bob, I know that you have you've got this great article, which I want to promote. It's published by LifeSite, called If Christians Don't Personally Engage in Politics, It's All Over for America. We need to say that, just give us a few bullet points again of what this Equality Act will do if we don't stop this act and other things that are happening in our nation.
It will apply this bogus understanding of discrimination to every and any aspect of human life, of society in the United States, whether it's a hospital, whether it's a school, whether it's a volunteer club. It touches everything, because if you refuse to include, here, let's have a food pantry run by a church. If the church does not preside or let so-called same-sex marriages there, they are in effect becoming accomplices to discrimination through the food pantry. I mean, I'm sorry to say this, but that's the case. If the church wants to build a school or wants to build a rectory or add on to their to the size of their church, they won't be able to get a loan if they have the doctrine that they teach on Sundays and Sunday school, on Wednesdays, whatever, or in the school, that same-sex behavior is not conforming to the understanding of what good morals is.
But
there's
a whole
to get alone.
There's a whole list of, and churches are not protected in the Equality Act.
No.
Let me just also say one of the most frightening is that we've seen this actually happen in some areas. The authorities will be able to remove children from homes from the legal custody of their parents if parents try to prevent them from having, you know, sex change operations or hormones. All right, so people know some of this, Bob, but they are on this. And all the other things we see playing out in our culture right now, people feel helpless. And so let's talk to Christians, because you have a good deal of your article where you talk. We only have 2 minutes left. What can people actually do to fight back? And you say it's in the ballot box, and politically, how can they do that?
Okay, number one, go find out how to register people in your state and in other states. About 40 states have online registration. Number two, Justice
voting.
Roberts. Right, for voting. Justice Roberts gave us a partial answer, as did James Madison. Madison said, use of the power of the purse can redress any grievances. Roberts wrote a memo about 20 years ago talking about curbing the powers of the court. He pointed out that the court couldn't even hear certain cases for 125 years because Congress didn't give them the appellate jurisdiction. That can be done today. Right now, the appropriations bill for the courts prohibit them from spending more than $10,000 on receptions. You could prohibit them from even taking any of these kinds of cases. It is very clearly there that that power can be done. You need to ask your member of Congress, are you willing to take the jurisdiction away from the court and to do it on an appropriations amendment? That's the fastest way to do it.
But, of course, before we get there, we need to have people representing us who we can trust will do that, Bob, and you know that. So you know all about that. You ran grassroots campaigns all of those years you served in Virginia, and you
Correct. You
won and you were stung by that process. And so you are saying Christians must get involved and engage in politics or is all over. The article is in LifeSite News. We'll put it on our Facebook page, and I highly recommend that you go to that, share it with others, and let's engage. Let's fight back. Let's just stop being, you know, so passive. Roll up our sleeves and fight. Bob Marshall, you are a great example of that. God bless you and keep you safe. Thank you for joining us today, and happy 4th of July. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk. Sandy Rios back with you, and it's so good to be back with you on this special day. By the time you hear me say this, I'm going to be someplace long away. I'm actually going to be joining the president and his team in Mount Rushmore tonight for the July 3rd celebration. And of course, I'm reading all these news articles about it. They call it the president's fireworks. They're now calling it's in spite of the brush fires. The president wants to have these fireworks. It's just all bad, you know. But it's not bad to me. I'm excited about this. I think the U.S. Air Force Academy band will be there. There will be fireworks, and of course, you have that grand monument. So I'm really looking forward to that. So I'll tell you all about it when I get back. And while I'm gone, and I will be gone all next week, you're going to be in great hands. My friend J. Christian Adams will be hosting, and of course, Christian is he was a whistleblower at the Justice Department during the Obama years, and he has such knowledge. So I just love it when he hosts for me, and you're going to enjoy it. And also then, Fred Jackson, who is the head of our news department, Fred was with Canadian Broadcasting for a number of years, and he has so much expertise and wisdom, and he brings, you know, that kind of knowledge to the news team. So he'll be hosting for me also. So you will be in very good hands. And as you look to this weekend, I hope that you will take to heart, remember Proud American. We talked about that earlier in the week, hashtag Proud American. If you go to heritageaction.org, you can find out some suggestions they have for how you can actually celebrate this holiday in a very meaningful way. And I would say this, I used to sing a song years and years ago. It was recorded by Thelma Houston, and it was If This Was Your Last Song. And it was about, you know, if this was the last time you were going to sing, what would you sing about? And what would the lyrics be? And would you sing with all your heart? How would you sing? So I would say this, if this would be the last 4th of July that America can ever celebrate in this way, what will you do? How will you celebrate it? What will you say while you still can say it? And so with that kind of challenge, I hope that you'll think about, give it some good thought. You know, think about your kids, your grandchildren, leaving a legacy. I know when I was in Russia, right after the breakup of the Soviet Union, whether it was KGB agents or ballerinas or drunks in the park, they all told me that they remembered when they were children being told about God from their grandmothers. No one dared speak about it except their babushkas, you know, and they would tell them about God, and they never forgot. So that when the Soviet Union opened up, they were ripe for hearing the message, even though they had been raised in communist Russia for those 40 years. And so I'm saying plant seeds, be intentional. And enjoy yourself. There's nothing, you know, the left cannot take away our joy and our love for this country. Think about, it's kind of like when you think about what God has done for us, and that's separate, but also complementary, because I think God has worked through this country. We have been raised and born and raised, most of us, in freedom, which we have long taken for granted. And now we're seeing it be threatened on our streets, in the halls of Congress, in the media. We see the fruits of you know, propaganda in our children. And so for the first time, we're having to really reckon with what it was our founding fathers had in mind, what it was our fathers and grandfathers fought for. And so I hope that you will reflect on that. And we have a great history. We have a great history. If you want to be encouraged, open up your books, open up your histories, read the preamble to the Constitution itself, the Declaration of Independence, and be thrilled again at the marvel of this incredible country. And I hope you will celebrate with a passion, just in case it's your last chance to do it. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.